first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. Arsenal won this past weekend, Fulham won this past weekend, and the Colorado Rapids won this past weekend. Mark, 3 games, 9 points. All is well with the world?
Well, you're forgetting the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who also won this past weekend.
Boom! So
it was a really good weekend, man.
Yeah, it was a good weekend, Mark, but it's been, I would say, did the Riverhounds play on Saturday?
They played on Saturday, they play again on Wednesday, and then they play again on Saturday. So they got 3-8,
okay.
Just like the Colorado Rapids. So it's a hard week for me because, you know, I got to tune in on Wednesday and Saturday and Saturday. So it's, but I ain't complaining, man. Too much soccer is really not a thing that exists in the world.
Poor Mark, you have to watch too much soccer. So Saturday was fantastic, and we'll say into Sunday morning because, your Gunners, Mark, had a morning game. But basically everything since then really has been total chaos in MLS. You know, I'll say up through, you know, the first kickoff, in MLS play on Sunday with Atlanta United hosting New York City FC. For those of you who haven't been on Twitter, I would encourage you to go check out the hashtag AUnitedFront, as in Atlanta United. So A, just the letter, United with a capital U, and then Front with a capital F. It has been the fallout from several Atlanta United supporters who are carrying anti-gun violence and other political statements, generally aligning with left-facing politics, but also ones that I think generally a lot of Americans are going to agree with in terms of just, like, not actively supporting fascism, for example, ending gun violence. And there was a whole bunch of aftermath that happened at Mercedes-Benz on Sunday with security confiscating some of that paraphernalia and then getting into some altercations with some of these supporters. Not terribly unlike the Colorado Rapids incident from earlier this year in the Rocky Mountain Cup, Mark, in which the RSL supporter pride flag with the Antifa down into the left facing three black arrows was also confiscated as well. And we've since seen some other supporters groups come out there, namely the Timbers Army. And I think recently, even tonight, Mark, the Northern Guard up at DC with Detroit City FC also had paraphernalia for that. All of this also in the wake of Mike Petke getting fired from Real Salt Lake after just completing his suspension time for the profanity-laden, P-word-laden, you know, borderline, I would say, full-on referee verbal abuse in the league's cup match that supposedly included a note slipped under the door with even more abuse after that game as well. Petke was immediately suspended, I believe, without pay. Then it was decided that he would ultimately serve a 3-game suspension in total. 2 of those weeks would be without pay, a $25,000 fine, the heaviest suspension ever levied by a club or the league in MLS history. And then apparently after extra deliberations and talking with people and a report by the Desert News basically saying that it was all the millennial RSL supporters being completely against it and the older generation not being against it, Mike Petke has been suspended. And to top it all off, Mark, not in a total team chaos in a bad way mood, just a few hours ago, Wilmer Cabrera was let go from the Houston Dynamo, and Johan Blomberg has been loaned back to the Swedish First Division for the remainder of his contract with the Colorado Rapids, effective immediately. Mark, that's a lot of news. Help me make sense of this news world salad that normally we could sum up by simply reading one run-on sentence with poor punctuation from the President of the United States.
I was literally about to say, Matt, I think you said the word "and" like 137 times there. It was like the longest run-on sentence. And I think you like literally didn't take a breath. You just kind of kept going like didgeridoo style through the entire sentence, just kind of nose breathing while you talk through the mouth in order to make sure you got through the entire sentence. I don't even know how to unpack that. I do have to correct two minor, exceedingly minor mistakes. One was just you were in full flow and you meant to say Mike Petke got fired, but you repeated for the second time that Mike Petke got suspended. But I think the listeners all knew you meant that Mike Petke ultimately got fired. The second one's a really minor one, which is really goofy, which is that it looks like desert news, but there's an extra E in there, and it's the Deseret News or the Deseret News. And Deseret is some kind of reference to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's like some sort of loosely originally Mormon-based news service that's straight out of Utah, but it's D-E-S-E-R-E-T. So anyways, how am I going to make sense of all this? Well, okay, so the broader context to this, so you kind of speedballed a whole bunch of stuff together, which is the End Gun Violence Now statement by Bedoya that got repeated in a banner. One. Two, the Three Arrows flags that have been flown at multiple stadiums this season and have been removed at multiple stadiums this season. It's been removed or flown in Seattle, Portland, Colorado, and also Detroit, although Detroit's NPSL.
And then Atlanta, and I believe we've also seen this insignia at Minnesota recently as well.
And the third one is the P word, which is another like controversial thing in a similar thing in a similar grain or sense, which is that it's a thing that people say that is politically incorrect, that some people would prefer was not displayed at soccer games, but it typically goes the other way. So there's this, we're getting into a really complicated issue, which is the, divide between quote unquote free speech and political speech. And the other aspect to it that's really interesting is the question of MLS's responsibility in policing these things. I've seen a couple things that I thought were really interesting. One thing that I keep seeing popping up on Twitter is people saying, this isn't a problem in other leagues and other teams. People can say and do whatever they want. The difference is on no other sport are you allowed to bring banners, right, or flags, right? The NFL doesn't let you put up signs, neither does the NBA, ostensibly because you're blocking someone else's view. But the reality is I think one thing is they
TIFO does not exist in any other sport at the level that it does. And when it does exist in some form, it is purely the team banner that I've seen. You know, a number of clubs like will actually have a paid employee wave one of the banners during, you know, when the team comes onto the ice at an Avs game, for example. That's different from somebody bringing a Petke out or, you know, C38, you know, displaying some frustrations with the club or certainly getting into the political realm, which can exist within soccer, which in many ways does not percolate into fandom in the stadium in other sports.
Right. So the basic question is this. What counts as political speech and at what point does MLS or the, you know, security division of each MLS team have to determine that a given insignia or flag or statement is quote-unquote political speech, right? Like End Gun Violence Now is sort of political in the sense that we're asking politicians to do something, but it's sort of not political because, you know, the only people who are in favor of gun violence are serial killers. And I don't know that they really deserve a massive and important lobby in America. It's not political per se. The Three Arrows is more political because people really do think that Antifa is a very political organization. But the flip side of that is like, I don't know that most Americans are pro-fascism. There's a very, very, very small pro-fascist wing in America. So like three, you know, and the thing that you get, like, I think it's Seattle's supporters group that says that they're anti-racist, anti-fascist, and support soccer for everyone. Like, you know, being anti-racist and anti-fascist is an old school kind of ska inflected soccer truism. It's not necessarily really rooted. I mean, I think that kind of statement predates this whole politicization of the Trump administration and Antifa and all this stuff that kind of is aside from soccer. So that's my kind of take on the whole thing, which is that like MLS is really struggling to try and say, we want to stamp out all speech left, right, and center and just have people say, soccer is good. We like the soccer ball, you know, like, but, you know, there's a degree to which people get to say what they want when they put banners up at stadiums. And that's a good thing. And being able to say, we welcome everyone to our supporters group. We welcome everyone onto the pitch. Don't cross the line. Don't say racist, hurtful, anti-Semitic, homophobic crap. We want you to be welcome in our stadium. Also sometimes implies making a borderline political statement, like we're not going to act like fascists up in the stands either. So it's like there's no good way around it. I'm not super comfortable with the three arrows, to be really honest, but I'm also not comfortable banning it either. Like, that's where I stand. Like, I know – I understand the slippery slope of why it might be considered political speech, but I hate when MLS teams have to take it down. Like, I don't like it. It makes me unhappy. So, you know, color me confused.
Yeah, no, Mark, I hear you on that. I guess the thing that I find really interesting is MLS, unlike really any other sports, is kind of becoming the sort of public platform, not unlike what the social media platforms have to deal with it, you know, whether it's hate speech, you know, on Twitter or something, or I saw a thing, there was a bit of a blow up maybe a month or two ago, when people were actually reporting, there was a post on Facebook, associated with online dating and, you know, the, dynamics, with feminism in there, and it was posted including the statement men are trash, which is a common hashtag that feminists will use to shame men who are being misogynistic on social media platforms or on online dating sites as well, and people reporting that as hate speech, as if saying, you know, it was effectively the all lives matter response to men are trash, as opposed to a statement that all men are trash. And unlike the NBA, or I guess, you know, you could say the NFL, to the extent that the national anthem has become politicized with players protesting and taking a knee with that, you know, MLS Stadia and particularly the supporters groups now are almost becoming a platform where that dynamic of, you know, well, if you want to be open and inclusive to everybody or just not have a statement, then MLS could let everything go. But then if everything's game, then eventually chaos is going to happen, because that is where people who have differing opinions are going to exist in some level. We've talked on this, Mark, and this would almost be worth its own show or its own segment, at least, about the politicization of soccer fans and how, generally speaking, at least in our own anecdotal experiences, they're generally a little bit more left-leaning, a little bit more liberal, a little bit more inclusive. But, you know, obviously, I'm going to assume that there is at least one NRA member who has stepped foot inside an MLS stadium sometime in this year. You know, just with the statistics and how widespread we are as a country in terms of the number of cities that we have taking up, that there are people who are against abortion rights or are pro-life, for example, or maybe even there's some people, not specifically calling out any clubs in Indiana per se, who believe that, like, gay people shouldn't be allowed to get married. And so, you know, it's the, you know, you only allow the anti-view to exist if you allow a pro-view to exist. Nor do you say no political speech whatsoever, so then nobody says anything, and then it's just either support your team, banter against the opponent, or soccer is awesome or anything. But then what does that mean for Pride Night? So it's a really weird dynamic. It's something that MLS is definitely having issues with, and especially given that the CBA is going to be up in January, I wouldn't be surprised that if this came up, and in the similar way that Twitter and Facebook and all these other platforms are dealing poorly with these dynamics, given how politically charged and how much outrage culture there is right now, I don't know that there's a good answer for how to solve this thing and have everybody be happy, because inevitably you're going to do something that's going to promote people who have differing views to become immediately aware of it and have to interact with each other, or you're immediately silencing everybody. And I think a lot of these supporters groups, in the same way that Alejandro Bedoya scores the goal at DC United and runs over to the mic and up us and interrupts JP De La Cameron to say, you know, Congress, do something, end violence now, let's go. I think a lot of these supporter groups see their TIFO opportunities and in stadium as an opportunity for them to express themselves in ways that they think are good. And a lot of that is good in terms of soccer for all and being opening and being inclusive. And I think a lot of that comes with some more politically charged statements that the league doesn't necessarily want to allow and then thus potentially condone for, you know, taking a political stance. And, you know, we could get into that as to whether whether or not, you know, MLS should have a political view in the same way that Hobby Lobby and, you know, and, Chick-fil-A, for example, have inherently politically charged, or what's the Soul Cycle. I don't know if you saw that, Mark, like
Oh, yes.
They had a whole issue as well. So it's a weird, you know, slobby minutia, and I don't know that I have a good answer for it, listeners, and I don't know that, you know, I don't know what else to do with this, but, you know, people are going to continue to talk about this, and this has to be something the league has to deal with, because if nothing else, all of this, I think, stems from, on some level, a response or the word getting out about what's been going on in left field at Yankee Stadium. And Don Garber and MLS did a horrible job with that. And I think it's only going to get more charged up as more fan groups and supporters groups and more, fans and MLS teams continue to, you know, throw their proverbial hat or statement into this ring of something that's already charged and getting, you know, chaotic.
Yep. I think we've covered this issue pretty well in terms of both of us being, in favor of free speech, unsure of how MLS is proceeding to try and deal with this. We both like supporter culture. And I think one of the things that's really complicated for all MLS fans, leave aside the politics, is just allowing supporter culture to grow unfettered without the team getting involved. I mean, that's like a different aspect of this whole thing, which is like the league and the team sending in, you know, $12 an hour paid security guards to confiscate a banner. The other thing that was crazy, and you know about this probably because you've been following this online, but when that you take a banner away from somebody and you kick somebody out of the stadium for having that banner, apparently MLS has like a 5-point system that in place to reinstate the fan. And the fan has to take some online course, and they have to pay $250, and they have to write a letter of apology. And like, that's the really most galling thing, that like, you could bring a banner that says end gun violence now, and then the league could make you take like a good behavior course online and pay $250. Like, if I'm an MLS fan at Atlanta at that point, that's the moment that I become a Silverbacks fan.
Yep.
Or like, start going to support the USL team in Gwinnett, you know, like, I would be done with the league if they were going to make me pay $250, because, and that's the argument that like folks on the Northern Guard, the supporters group for Detroit City, would argue, that like supporter culture is kind of more important on some level than even soccer itself, because it's about, you know, the fans owning the sport, which is really the thing that sets apart North American or any soccer really from all the other North American sports. Like, NBA fans are like customers, and supporters are supporters. Like, I am always really careful, Matt, when I write articles, that I almost never refer to fans only as fans. I will use supporters two or three times and throw in fans as a synonym maybe once. But yeah, like, always respect supporter culture and supporters. The minute you treat the fans as fans and you treat them as customers, you lose what makes soccer special. And that's part of the other aspect of this whole kerfuffle over banners and free speech, which is like, don't infantilize your supporters because they're the lifeblood of the club.
Yeah. On a more trivial note, Mark, let's get over to it. I think both of us expressed a little bit of surprise at Wilmer Cabrera getting fired from the Houston Dynamo. So now with New England Revolution have already hired a new coach in Bruce Arena. There's the Dutch guy whose name I can't remember and won't butcher on this show, who just got hired by the Dutch technical director at FC Cincinnati. So you now have three head coaching opportunities and two new candidates with MLS experience. I would not expect the Colorado Rapids to go after a Mike Petke, but at least initial returns are at least some curiosity amongst Rapids Twitter about Wilmer Cabrera, who is with the Houston Dynamo, who obviously has a lot of connections, as I believe he's Colombian international, if I'm not mistaken, or at least he grew up in Colombia. I might have that wrong, listeners. Don't yell at us with angry tweets if I end up getting the South American country wrong. But in any case, a former player one who knows the league, one who has had success in the league. You know, he kind of had Chivas USA barely floating by for a year or two there, in a no-win situation. Got Houston Dynamo to the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago, won the U.S. Open Cup last year, and did so with a very South American-flavored team for a club that's looking to bring in some, you know, get on the bandwagon of Central and South American talent, and also has two new DPs, and one guy who has been outspoken about definitely being a hashtag player kids approach. Mark, what would you think of Wilmer Cabrera as a general candidate in the MLS pool, and especially given that the only other two candidates everybody was talking about were Robin Fraser and Tab Ramos? You know, now there's two other, you know, coaching vacancies for rosters that right now are better constructed than the Colorado Rapids, and two teams that very much are thinking that they can make the playoffs. We spoke a couple weeks ago about wondering about the timing, and once it got to the point where other clubs were making moves to either try and make the playoffs or in the aftermath of getting eliminated from playoff contention, there were now, you know, better ships to become the captain of, and now potentially are the Rapids potentially looking at those two main candidates where they've been the only, you know, open ship, you know, in the harbor, now are potentially looking at, you know, those captains, you know, fielding offers from other people. Your thoughts on the general state of the MLS head coaching job market right now?
Well, Mike Petke is toxic at this point. Like, yes. Nobody's touching him, yes, with a 10-foot pole. Petke's going to need the standard 1-year rehabilitation tour, and then he's probably going to have to be a USL coach for the foreseeable future. Not that that's a punishment. There's a lot of really good USL coaches. The coach's name you were looking for before with FC Cincinnati is a guy named Ron Jans from the Dutch league. But I don't think that that's so Pecky's like not in the running for any jobs, because he needs to prove, now that he's had two jobs where his most important and interesting quality was his ability to completely lose his mind, which was good at times, you know, and bad at times. Like, everybody, you know, he's just like Bobby Knight with Indiana, yes, in the sense that Bobby Knight intimidated referees and intimidated his players in a way that sometimes helped them perform better, but sometimes was counterproductive, and, you know, yelling
and borderline illegal and violent.
Not even borderline. I mean, like, he, you know, he was like hauled into court on abuse charges for one player that he like choked. But that, you know, like, that's the thing, that that coaches who care passionately, like Mike Petke, have to find that equilibrium. They have to find the fine line where they don't go over the line. You know, there's a point at which you become abusive and toxic. And Petke not only has done that, but his letter of I wouldn't even call it an apology letter. His letter of response that came out, I think, today was really
tone deaf.
Didn't take any responsibility. It was basically like, I understand that they fired me because they think I'm too passionate. And it's like, no, dude, they fired you because you went way, way, way over the line, and you're totally not aware of it. So that's it for Petke. Wilmer Cabrera seems to be a pretty good coach, but, you know, he's had a really bad run of things with Houston. And I think it's hard to really tell, for me as an outsider, whether he isn't getting the most out of Houston or there isn't anything to get out of Houston, because it's like the Albert Elise show. We were talking before we started about the fact that Elise has really faded after the Gold Cup, and that's really common with top players. You know, they go off to, they have a half a season where they're just crackerjacks for MLS. They go to the Gold Cup or they go to the World Cup, they come back and they're really run down and they don't perform to the same level. You know, look at Carlos Vela last year. He comes back after playing for Mexico in the World Cup and he kind of faded down the stretch for MLS. And that's, you know, they were a one trick pony. It was like the Albert Delis show. If you couldn't get him dribbling you on a counterattack, they don't really have much going for them. So I don't know that Wilmer Cabrera got a fair shake. I think he's going to get another chance probably in MLS, but not this year. He's going to lay low again or go back to USL for a year or two and then come back. But I think he's a good coach. I've seen no evidence that he's not really good at what he does. So I think for the Rapids, long story short, they're still down to Ramos and Frazier. But the biggest question with them is, has Connor Casey really proven that he can do the job and put himself in a position where maybe, you know, Porrick Smith calls up those other two candidates and decides, like, we're just going to go with Connor and see how he plays out.
Mm-hmm. No, good points there, Mark. I mean, I'm not openly advocating for Wilmer Cabrera to, you know, to get the Colorado Rapids job, but just given his connections to Central and South America in the ways that the other two managers don't, and the fact that he has had some success in MLS on budget teams where there were not a whole lot of expectations, I think he's at least worth Porrick getting his, you know, the front office staff together and everything and saying, what do we think of this guy? Or, you know, the various, advanced analytics that they use to ultimately determine and hire Anthony Hudson, maybe run some of those programs or, you know, statistical models that they have, you know, with the last, you know, say year and a half worth of Houston Dynamo data that they have. I think at least it's a stone worth overturning. I'm not advocating that he immediately add it to the rock collection. I think the other thing that's a little bit more relevant to think about here is given that, you know, Houston Dynamo are potentially immediately entering the head coaching search. There's been a little bit of rumblings, but not a lot confirmed, that RSL is looking to bring Jason Christ back to the show and everything. So maybe that's another candidate. But the point is that previously the Rapids kind of had all the cards in their hand, in that the U-20s weren't doing a whole lot. So it's not like Tab Ramos had a lot going on right now. He's just reporting to the office and probably keeping in touch with the players, you know, at the Federation headquarters in Chicago. And then obviously Robin Frazier's, you know, doing his stuff day in and day out with Toronto FC as they're trying to make the playoffs. But, you know, it's not like he's, you know, he's not actively fielding any other job offers right now. So if there's anything that indicates that the club is concerned that RSL or Houston are going to go after those two, then, you know, you've got to speed up the time scale if indeed those are the two finalist candidates and you've done all the interviews and, you know, just a final decision hasn't been rendered, or there was, you know, secretly been, you know, a bunch of dotting of I's and crossing of T's that, you know, one of us or Sam Saiskel or Paul Tenorio hasn't been able to hear whispers about right now. But previously, the Rapids kind of had all the cards in that they were the only, you know, that they were the only head coaching opportunity that was open now. And potentially now the Rapids are vying for candidates with other openings that are potentially a little bit more lucrative, as far as compensation is concerned, and then certainly a better roster and being in a position to be a little bit more successful. Maybe not as much flexibility, because presumably that next head coach is going to come in and decide whether or not to keep a Tommy Smith. You know, what role does Kellen Acosta have, and certainly the two open DP slots that the club's, you know, open to. But now that timetable has to at least be revisited and rethought about given how the market has changed, you know, just in the last 36 hours. And then I guess the last thing that we'll touch on, Mark, we have Johan Blomberg, who has departed the Colorado Rapids for the remainder of his contract. I believe he's still had a year and a half left on his deal, or was it just the half season, maybe with a team option?
Oh, I'd have to look that up. You gotta get. Let me get to my spreadsheets, Matt. You know,
okay.
You know,
get to your spreadsheets. In any case, listeners, Johan Blomberg, Swedish international, was taking up an international roster spot. A budget charge player. He wasn't on TAM or a DP or anything, and he's heading off to. It's GIF. I'm going to guess that it's probably not GIF. And then it's Sundsvall. I'm probably horribly mispronouncing that, but it's a club in the middle of the Allsvenskan. That's the first division in Sweden. And he's on loan with the rest of the for the rest of his contract with the club. So an international roster spot comes off the books. You know, he was 32 years old. He only made 24 appearances in what would have been, you know, over a year and a half. And he had only had 3 appearances this whole season and, you know, never really fit in, Mark. You know, he had that nice 20 to 30 yard dink over the top that a Dominic Baggi absolutely loved to run on, but I think we can argue that, you know, the work rate was there, but maybe not the quality on the defensive side of the ball. He didn't bring in enough offensively to really warrant that. You know, I think, you know, it's at no fault of Johan. You know, obviously he was brought in specifically to fit the type of what you know, Anthony Hudson wanted to be, and really he didn't have a distinct role that fit his skill set under what Connor Casey's been running in. And I think probably with him and the family situation, there's probably just too much uncertainty with the new head coach coming in to where now, you know, he can just fill out the rest of his contract, go back to Sweden, move the kids there, and then presumably if he wants to still keep playing, I think the league where he would have, you know, the most interest in and the country country that he'd have the most interest in living. Both of those would be Sweden, so that fits in with him, you know, if he wanted to go back and meet up with AIK, or maybe, you know, he has experience coming up as a younger player in the Swedish, you know, lower divisions, where I think certainly he would, you know, have a market and be interested in and not have to relocate to the other side of the world. Mark, how long was Johan Blogberg on the books for the Rapids for the rest of however?
He was, according to my notes, his contract was up at the end of 2019. Almost all MLS contracts come with a club option for the year following. That's just the standard way it works. It's also, by the way, the standard contract in USL, or almost, to be honest, in USL, it's almost the only kind of contract. You never hear of a multi-year deal in USL. You always hear of a 1 year with a club option for a second. Blomberg was making $250,962 for this year and took up an international slot, I think, as you mentioned. He's 30 years old also, but I think you said it really well. Johan was a jack of all trades, master of none. He was a really useful Swiss Army knife. You could plug, no pun intended, that he's actually Swedish. You could plug him into almost any position on the field, and he would give you replacement-level play. You're right about that over the top ball. That was the one thing he could really do better than most players, but he didn't really master the through ball. His tiki taka short passing wasn't exceptional. His passive move was fine, but nothing great. Defensively, he was good, but he wasn't going to be your killer, defensive midfielder. Although there were times when I thought that that was probably the best way to start turning around the Rapids. Terrible fortunes at the beginning of the year, but you know, that was really when we were looking for anything. It's funny that I was watching the game today, because the Rapids game happened concurrently with the Riverhounds game, which I was covering here. So I was watching the game today, and I noticed that there were only two players on the Rapids roster who did not make the 18, and it was Blomberg, and I kind of went, huh, well, okay, that sort of makes sense, and Sjoberg. And so Sjoberg not making the 18 kind of also set off small alarm bells in my head, that he's probably also going to be, although he is under contract through 2020. So I'd say
Axel has immediate asset flip value within the league, whereas I'm not sure, like, what are you getting on return for Blomberg, especially given, I mean, if Blomberg got his green card tomorrow and then he wasn't counting as an INT slot, or he was willing to take a pay cut. But, you know, like you said, Mark, right, you know, he was, you know, Blomberg, I think, fits into the Baggio Husidic archetype of players, and the difference is that there's, you know, 10 Baggio Husidics that exist in the league right now. They're all domestic players making $100,000 or less in the league. An INT slot plus making $250,000, you know, just not, that's not really a movable asset unless you're, you know, unless you're eating some other poison in order to make it valuable, in which case then, this was a loan where probably the Swedish club is just picking up his salary, you know, right, off the top of my head. You know, those leagues financially are about equivalent outside of the DPs and everything, and there's no international thing to worry about with Sweden. So this is water under the bridge, wash our hands, absolve, you know, each other of the situation, and then don't have to worry about it. So Blomberg's going to move on at the end of the contract, and the Rapids are going to move on in 2020.
Or the Rapids, you know, he's got about $100,000 left that they owe him. The other way they could do it is they could send him off to Sweden and make a deal to pay half of his contract, which means that for Colorado, who are barely using him anyways, they save themselves $50,000, which is, you know, just a couple good weekends at the Dippin' Dots stand anyhow. So, like, that's the way they're looking at it. And more importantly, I think, because I really do believe that both Porik and Connor, they do care about these players. They're not just financial assets that are flippable. But they know that Johan's not getting his time, that he ought to be playing, because he is a soccer player and he's good and he can help a team. He just can't help Colorado right now. So flip him somewhere where he can get some time, and he could play, and he'll probably be happier. And what better way than to send him off to his homeland and let him ride out that the rest of the year. So we wish him well. We hope he reunites with the other former Colorado Rapids who have gone off to that Nordic paradise in Sweden. I speak, of course, of Mohamed Saeed, who is currently playing for a team in Sweden. He tweeted at me just the other day. He's a good guy. So it would be, hopefully they'll reunite on the fields of battle in Valhalla, not just go off to a fiery, Viking funeral.
Yes, in any case. All right, Mark, this is the longest banter that we've ever had, namely because we just put a bunch of stuff that we normally say for the end of the show at the beginning. Shall we get to the actual talking about soccer being played on the green grass with the white bullet?
Yeah.
All right.
Bullet. Well,
yes.
Done.
Listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids were victorious against the Earthquakes of San Jose by a score of 2-1. Kellen Acosta opens the scoring just before halftime, his second goal of the entire season. Diego Rubio with a nice turnover, and then Kellen Acosta with a well-placed shot. Not a lot of pace on it, but just enough that Daniel Vega was able to get a touch, but it stays inside the near side post. Prior to that, you had a really frenetic pace, but between the two teams, you had a couple posts, Danny Wilson and Kai Kamara with a couple looks, Diego Rubio being the engine in the middle for the Colorado Rapids, and then it was Kellen Acosta actually wearing the captain's armband, Mark, with Clint Irwin starting in goal in replace of Tim Howard, and then Danny Wilson in for the, at least for now, injured Tommy Smith, and Danny Wilson did not look completely outside of his depth against the San Jose Earthquakes. Chris Wondolowski with a couple of looks, one that he put off the post. And then Connor Cape on the radio broadcast behind me, Mark, had a nice little chuckle about something involving the national team of Belgium regarding another opportunity that Wando had in the first pass. First half, the Rapids hit the post, and then almost immediately 2 minutes later in the 62nd minute, it was Vaco who scored with a really, really nice shot set up by Danny Huysens on that one to tie it 1-1. And then it was Diego Rubio, Rosenberry overlapping into the middle. The Quakes really had felt like they were gassed after the 70th minute for me, Mark, just with all of the rotations and how much ground that a Shea Salinas and a Tommy Thompson and a Florian Youngworth were really having to cover. And then Rosenberry goes forward, gets the ball to Diego Rubio. Man marking kind of gets all discombobulated with the Rapids counterattack and San Jose being super gassed. Nobody steps up to actually cover the person on the ball, and Rubio slots it into the bottom far corner perfectly against Daniel Vega. A sixth goal in eight appearances for Diego Rubio. He scored 2 weeks prior against the San Jose Earthquakes, and this time was victorious, and not a lot of helter-skelter in the final 10 minutes, Mark. Normally we've seen in those situations, you know, the Rapids are really trying to go for it if it's a tie game, or the opponent, you know, is really just running on fumes and trying to do something, and I didn't see a whole lot from the Quakes in the final 10 minutes. You know, I think maybe Matias Almeida probably learned a good lesson in terms of man-marking at altitude, something that he didn't have to do as significantly, or at least he had better players just with the fitness levels you had in Liga MX, and ultimately that wasn't successful. Connor Casey complimented the group of players after the game, and then said that they made incremental changes where they had a much better idea of what they wanted to do and how they wanted to attack San Jose in multiple phases of play after the loss against San Jose. He said they noticed a few things after about the first 15 minutes and made a couple changes there, and had a really productive talk in halftime. And by the time it was, you know, the 70th minute and ready, he really felt like the group felt very comfortable in terms of what San Jose was doing and how the Rapids could take away what they did well and then also make the Quakes very uncomfortable. Rabbi Mark Goodman, what was your good thing from this Rapids victory against the San Jose Earthquakes on Saturday?
I like the coach's approach. I mean, I think I took a look at this and put it in the article that I'm putting out tomorrow on Soccer Rabbi. But this week, Colorado dribbled the ball 26 times. 2 weeks ago against San Jose, they also dribbled the ball. And a dribble is where a player attempts to pass a defender by dribbling beyond them. And sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not. They're also called, there's another phrase for it sometimes in the soccer world, which is a take on. So 2 weeks ago against San Jose, they also dribbled the ball 26 times. Last week against Montreal, the Rapids attempted 18 dribbles. And 3 weeks ago against New York City, the Rapids attempted to dribble the ball 18 times. So the Rapids increased the amount of dribbles against San Jose. And that's specifically because when you're playing against a man marking system, you're one on one. And what happens, and this is just like in basketball, if you beat your guy on the dribble, then you're forcing the defense to rotate over another player. That guy's got to leave his man, and suddenly the player he has just left is open. So I actually looked at this a couple times. There were a bunch of times where Shinyashiki dribbled past his man, drew a defender to him, and created some an opening that wasn't there before. And the exact same thing happened on the opposite side of the field with Sam Nicholson. That Nicholson would blow by a guy, get the defense to collapse on him. Suddenly Rubio was open or Kai Kamara was open, and something could happen there. So that was the tactic that the coach came up with. And it generally worked. You know, it didn't work all the time, but it was an approach, and ultimately it created some chances for Colorado where there weren't otherwise. And that was great to see. And I wonder very openly whether Anthony Hudson would have done that. I don't know whether it's about tactical nuance or whether it's more about a coach saying, we're going to make the other team adapt to our system. One of the things I like about Connor Casey is that he's pretty malleable. We've seen different formations. We've seen different lineups more so than we have under Anthony Hudson. I remember last year I wrote an article about Anthony Hudson where I was frustrated with some of the people he was choosing, just because it didn't seem like the best lineup or it didn't seem like the best use of the team. And often the system that Hudson wanted to play last year at the beginning, it was the 5-3-2. Then eventually it was the 4-1-2-1-2, or the 4-4-2 diamond. The system the coach wanted to play took precedence over adapting to the opponent. And I really like that Connor Casey adapts to the opponent.
Well said, Mark. I'm going to hail Diego Rubio on this one. You know, a player who did not have a great start to the year. Granted, you know, nobody on the Rapids really had a good start to the year. And at least in the times that I've been able to see him in training recently, he is just, you know, he is out for blood on every single one of those chances, every single one of those drills. Connor Casey talked about how he's been working a lot harder and been more effective in training, and particular his partnership with Kai Kamara. So, you know, Kai doesn't get a goal in this one. You know, he had a couple really good chances there. I think he had one of the five posts that, you know, the teams collectively had between each other. But when Kai is not effective, he was occupying another defender. He was such a handful for Jerome Kasha and Florin Youngworth in this game that it gave Diego Rubio, Sam Nicholson, Andre Shinyashiki, and Kellen Acosta a lot more opportunities. So I thought this was, you know, this was probably in terms of the game being back and forth and also being extremely level in terms of what the teams were doing, I thought was just a really, really fun soccer game to watch, purely just from the love of the game standpoint, Mark. And it wasn't like some of the other Rapids games that we've seen where, you know, a goal drastically changes how both teams are playing. You know, both teams, you know, yes, there were adjustments in the first half, but both teams were going for it. It was even in that aspect. Nobody was really bunkering or anything. You know, the Rapids had a really good spring in their step coming out for the counterattack, but they weren't full parking the bus, you know, in a flat 4-5-1 with Kai Kamara really doing the only offensive thing. That is something I might have expected of Connor Casey 2 weeks ago at the San Jose Earthquakes, for example. And San Jose came out and had better energy in the second half, and obviously they got the goal, and you know, it was pretty much even up until when, you know, Diego Rubio gets the goal, and then at that point both teams are making a few substitutions, and then obviously the Rapids are trying to protect a result, you know, and San Jose is really trying to go for it. But you know, I don't, you know, when there's a score line that distinctly has one team happy with where they are and the other team not happy with where they are, I don't mind, or I don't hold it against either team for changing how they dictate play in that. You know, it wasn't like, you know, San Jose didn't come here thinking, you know, a 0-0 draw is happy for us. And the Rapids absolutely played like they were trying to win the game. And ultimately, they played well enough in which to win it. Mark, I'll throw it to you. Where do you want to start with bad stuff?
You know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, because as much as I was talking about how the coaching and the system was really, really good and it worked, statistically, the Rapids should have lost that game. They were outshot. And in terms of expected goals, San Jose produced 1.92 expected goals, while the Rapids produced 0.92 expected goals. So on math, the score should have been reversed. It should have been San Jose 2, Colorado 1. And if you saw that first half, you know, San Jose had 11 shots, and they had four that just barely missed. They had two that hit the right post, one that Chris Wondolowski put wide of the right post and one that Wando, for lack of a better term, Wandoed over the bar on the left side, from 6 yards out that he really should have hit. I mean, Chris Wondolowski was in pretty good position here for a hat trick in the first half, and he missed all those shots. Granted, that's a little ridiculous, but let's just say that they hit even one of those, then it's a draw. Or if they hit two of those, it's a win. So why the defense let those opportunities go, why there was so much possession for San Jose is a really good question that if they face Matias Almeida next year, they're going to have to unpack. So I think, you know, we got away with one is another way of looking at it. Now, if you play a team straight up and if you produce offensive chances, you're going to stay in the game even when you are outshot or where expected goals is going to tell you you're going to lose. Like one of the things that we learned with Hudson was that he got beat on expected goals almost every single game out. Like regression to the mean is going to happen. You're going to lose most of those games. Hudson was a tiny bit unlucky in the fact that he lost all of those games. But if you get beat on expected goals every single game, you know, by the end of the season, you're going to lose more than you win. And I think Connor Casey probably and the coaching staff need to figure that out. Like, why did the defense permit so many high quality chances? How can they reduce them? Was it a force of their man marking? Was the defensive midfield of Kellen Acosta and Jack Price pulled apart, or were the center backs making mistakes? Where was the fault in this game, and how can it be improved upon for future games? Matt, what did you see that troubled you?
Well, I'll piggyback on your point, Mark. You know, maybe you didn't notice this seeing it live or having the full, you know, 360-degree view as someone who's watching the game live. I noticed that Lalas Abubakar was way more proactive in all of the, you know, in all of the plays that he was involved in. He had to be way more physical and just way more aggressive anytime that he had a ball coming in. I don't know if that was part of the game plan. Maybe that's just something randomly I noticed that I wasn't, you know, I don't normally watch the center backs as closely because I know what I know now what a Tommy Smith and a Lawless partnership look like. You know, this is the first game that we saw Danny Wilson start and go 90 minutes next to Abubakar. So I don't know if that was something that was part of the game plan or just random or just the fact that, you know, Danny Wilson is less mobile than Tommy Smith or just they don't have that good of a relationship. So Lawless is thinking, I have to step up and be a little bit more active because of, you know, the lesser partnership that we have with the change in personnel to my left, I think. Yeah, because Lawless is right center back, if I'm not mistaken. So in any case, you know, Lawless had to step to the ball, you know, on that cross that went in, and he did enough to intercept it, but then he wasn't able to clear it, and then that allows Huijsens to gather it and then get it to Vaco, you know, who's been fantastic the last 6 weeks or so for San Jose to get the goal and tie that game 1-1. So that was a little bit of a detractor. You know, that being said, you know, in no way was this game was a Danny Wilson special, and as I've said, you know, the last couple of times that we've seen Danny Wilson start and go the full 90 minutes, you know, he's competent enough and he's figured out the league well enough that he can do one or two things really well, and there's still some weaknesses, and there are ways that you can account for that. And maybe Lawless just being a little bit more active, albeit giving up the only goal in the game, helped prevent the two or three that we've been used to seeing, you know, certainly a Danny Wilson and a Declan Wynn center back partnership. I'm going to echo your point on the chances there, Mark. I'm going to say something that a lot of people are not going to like. Chris Wondolowski is still one of the better poachers in terms of his movement and how he gets open and finds those high-quality opportunities in MLS. You could make a solid argument that he is one of the best poachers in league history, and at least in terms of what he did within the league, the best poacher within the league, and rightfully so. He has a whole bunch of goals and now, you know, has the most goals in all MLS play all time as from earlier this season, Mark. So, you know, yes, the Rapids struggled with that, but I'm not surprised given what Chris Wondolowski is able to do. That said, I'm also not surprised that Wando gets a bunch of those really great opportunities and then still finds a way to mess it up as he did with a couple of those. But I'll agree with you that this was a competitive game, Mark. This is one that the two teams were definitely in. This was one where there were times when the Rapids were definitely managing the scoreline rather than trying to go for, you know, a second goal or certainly a third goal in the final 10-15 minutes. But this was not a game that I would say, you know, by far the Rapids outplayed the San Jose Earthquakes. This was some iterative learning that they had from having played them recently, having made some adjustments going into this game. I think San Jose regressing a little bit, having to play at altitude, and the Rapids making progress at halftime and then in the second half as well. Now, if we were to go back, you know, 5-6 years ago when MLS teams in the same conference played each other three times, if there was a third game that the Rapids were playing later the season at DSG Park, I think the Rapids could make enough more iterative changes to where the Rapids would both outplay the San Jose Earthquakes and then also win that game. I think there's just enough matchups going on there that the Rapids could take advantage of what the San Jose Earthquakes were doing. I was so impressed in the first half just seeing Tommy Thompson and Jackson Ewell and how much space that Vaco covered, but then I also noticed every time the Rapids got the ball, they were making all of those key players work so hard defensively. So I think, you know, that might have been a little bit war of attrition, and you know, yeah, Kai has a shot that goes off the post, Wando has a shot that goes off the post, so the Rapids finished, you know, the couple of chances they had. They could have done a lot better finishing. I think if the Quakes are average in finishing, we're probably looking at a 2-2 draw in this one. But at the very least, we've seen Connor Casey make adjustments, and we've seen those players get used to those adjustments. And I think that's something to be happy about if you're a Rapids fan. But I think definitely that third game would be really interesting to see, because, you know, I think you could probably look at another 3-1 thumping for the Quakes if this was a home game. And unless the Quakes make an adjustment, probably the Rapids getting a result and deserving a result. But I think Matias Almeida is smart enough that he probably learned a lesson on Saturday, and I don't think they'll be making that mistake next year when they come to DSG Park. With that, Mark, anything else we haven't covered for Big Thing?
The big thing, this is going to be ridiculous because it's almost bantery. The big thing is, did you see that PETA apparently is protesting against fireworks at Dick's?
Yes.
Yeah.
We tweeted that out earlier this week, Mark.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah, from the Holding the High Line Twitter account.
I had no idea. Look at that. Yeah, that's the big thing, man. I mean, you know, these poor plague-ridden prairie dogs, they're being upset by the fireworks, and we have to, you know, we have to take care of them. Although I also found this out from the Extra Time podcast. Do you know what the death rate is amongst plague-infected prairie dogs?
It can't be very good. I mean, I wouldn't,
it's
like, it's
100%, Matt.
100%.
So like the poor prairie dogs, they're all dying of plague, and then we go and blow up a bunch of fireworks on them. They can't even get a good night's sleep while they're on their deathbeds, man. It's hard times out there. But you know, that's my big thing, is that the fireworks are upsetting the prairie dogs, who are dying anyways. That's my big thing. If that wasn't depressing enough, I don't know what is.
All right. I guess the only other thing I'll add for a big thing, I kind of addressed it already, Mark, but just, you know, the Rapids were able to make iterative adjustments and ultimately figure out a good team that plays a very distinct style of soccer and has a very unique game plan in MLS. They execute it very, very well, and the Rapids were able to figure out things and do things for themselves to have success and to also make the opponent feel uncomfortable. I cannot remember offhand, Mark, more than maybe once or twice at the absolute most that I could say that about the Anthony Hudson era Colorado Rapids, and Connor Casey clearly figured something out. And, you know, Connor Casey's got an opportunity to do that, you know, later this week with two teams that are definitely vying for a playoff spot. Shall we move on then, Mark?
Let's move.
All right, listeners, this coming Wednesday, tomorrow, or I guess today if you're listening to us on August 14th, the Colorado Rapids will be playing at Allianz Field, their first ever appearance at the stadium, against Minnesota United FC. This will be at 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And then on Saturday, they'll be down in Houston at BBVA Compass Stadium to take on the Dynamo. This will be at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Minnesota United are third in the Western Conference, Mark. They have 38 points off of 24 games played. They have a record of 11 wins, 8 losses, and 5 draws, plus 7 goal differential, and their form has been absolutely fantastic, including Open Cup at Allianz Field, where they are 7-1-4 in league play. Houston Dynamo in ninth, they just recently slipped out of the playoff contentions, possibly prompting Wilmer Cabrera to get sacked. They have 30 points off of 24 games played, 9 wins, 12 losses, and 3 draws, negative 8 goal differential. They're 7-3-3 at BBVA this season. And then the Colorado Rapids, still in 11th, the Western Conference, 26 points. Like Minnesota and Houston, they've played 24 games, so I guess they all have 8 game, or no. Is it 8? No, it's 10 games left in their season. Rapids have a record of 7-12-5, a negative 8 goal differential, just like the Houston Dynamo. And on the road, the Pids this season, Mark, unfortunately, just 1-6-3. We have previewed these teams previously, Mark, so I guess we'll just briefly address some of the changes that they have made, since last we saw them. We talked about Darwin Quintero, who was struggling, of late when the Colorado Rapids hosted the Loons at DSG Park. He's regained his form but has had a little bit of an injury concern. And then Dotson, who's been established himself as a left back, has been absolutely fantastic along with Manone. And then recently Mason Toy has been a really fantastic super sub attacker for them. Adrian Heath definitely loves his young attackers. Mason Toy, however, will not be available for the game on Wednesday, Mark, because he got a straight red card in Minnesota's game at Houston, or at Dallas, over the weekend, in which he spat at a FC Dallas player after some bantering and jawing between the whistles. And then the Houston Dynamo, you know, obviously will have, I guess, their first game under, is it Davey Arnaud, I believe, who's taking over as the interim head coach, Mark?
No idea.
No idea? Okay. Whoever's taking over as the interim head coach, for the Houston Dynamo, they flattened things out a little bit more. They'd recently acquired, at the trade deadline, Christian Ramirez, former Minnesota United and former, LAFC striker, U.S. international, who's been playing up top along with Mauro Minotas. They still have Albert Elise, who plays out wide, and their plethora of really good attackers. They also really haven't figured things out on the defensive side of the ball. Minnesota United definitely looking at getting 3 points on the Wednesday, Mark, and who knows where the headspace of the Houston Dynamo are going to be, especially with how close some of those players were with Wilmer Cabrera. We'll start first with Minnesota, Mark. What do you see in the Loons? What do you see in their playoff hopes for the rest of the season? And, you know, how do the Rapids try and have success against them, given that they won a nail biter earlier this season at DSG?
Well, they solved a lot of their problems. You know, their early career problems 2 years ago were that they had no defense whatsoever. Like, their entire back line was a flaming train wreck. And they solved a lot of those problems with Ike Opara. Then they went and got Ozzie Alonso as a defensive midfielder who has really just been as good as he's ever been, almost. And then you've got Darwin Quintero, who isn't pulling the weight that he was last year, but you basically got strength with those three players. You added that to their already kind of average or middling MLS lineup from last year, and suddenly they're in third place in the West, or fourth place in the West. I'm not sure where they're at. You said it before, but
third place in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I mean, it's a formidable team, and the Rapids are on the road, and so this is going to be a tough one for Colorado.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. And then one thing to also add, if I'm looking at the starting 11 for Minnesota United, actually one edit that I want to make. I mentioned Victor Vito Manone. He's actually the goalkeeper for Minnesota United. He had a big PK stop a couple of weeks ago against the Portland Timbers that was, you know, a big part of them getting a result in that game. The other wide player who I was referring to was Metaner, who's mainly been a right back for them. He's kind of their Edgar Castillo type, getting forward, has scored a couple bangers. But you look at it, so Ike Opara did not start on the weekend against FC Dallas, neither did Ozzie Alonso, and then you also had Darwin Quintero, Abu Dhanladi, and Jan Gregus on the bench as well. So I would fully expect a first choice starting 11, maybe with a little bit of rotation with the wingers, given Miguel Ibarra and Ethan Finley and a few of the others have kind of rotated in their mark. But you're going to see the best version of Minnesota United, given that they've had a jam-packed schedule with midweek games and Open Cup as well. So I think it's going to be a really, really tough result for the Rapids to get. And, you know, they've been absolutely fantastic at home. The Loons have been. I wouldn't expect the Rapids to get a result in this one. I think, I'd expect a pretty defensive game, try and get something on set pieces, have Kai Kamara in there. We'll see whether or not a Tommy Smith is available. You know, Danny Wilson had a really good look on a corner on the Saturday against San Jose, but I think you're looking at a get the ball out to the wide players, see if they can create things in one-on-one situations and really just hope for a set piece. But, you know, I'd fully expect the Loons to get all 3 points on Wednesday. Any closing thoughts on that, Mark? And then let's transition to looking to Saturday against the Dynamo.
Yeah, let's move on to the Dynamo. I feel like the Dynamo, you said it really well, that you know, when you lose a manager, kind of all bets are off, like trying to figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to come out. You know, I think it would be really hard to look at Houston as a likely candidate to win a game against Colorado. I think that they are coming out of chaos. They've lost something like 6 in a row. It's been a really bad defensive team. I watched their match this past weekend against Philadelphia, and while they possessed the ball well, they're fun to watch. They've got, you know, you can't count out some of their real talent players. I mean, Boniek Garcia is still a really capable midfielder. DeMarcus Beasley is really the fulcrum of the offense at left back, and he's not aged a day. I mean, he still produces really good crosses. He brings up the ball really well. He still gets back and defends. But the reality is, you know, they're a little bit shy. They're a little bit short on defense. And Philadelphia, when they wanted to, cut them apart and absolutely dunked on them all over the field. And they made mistakes, too. I mean, they just made a few mediocre turnovers or risky, played a bunch of risky balls in the final third. And like, they're making, you know, poor quality decisions, and it's hurting them. So, you know, expect that will continue. And I think that makes it at least a draw is likely for Colorado and Houston. Although the Rapids have gone into Houston last year, they went into Houston and got a win. So, you know, it's a favorable situation for the Rapids. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. And then just to add some stats onto your point, Houston Dynamo in their last 8 games, all competitions, Mark, 1 win, 7 losses. They've lost their last 4 in a row, and that one win was 3-1 on the road at Toronto FC. And ask anybody in Toronto FC Twitter, Mark, and they'll say that was one of their worst losses of the season. Tommy McNamara started in that game and got a goal in the 4th minute, and it was basically just, it was the Mauro Minota show, just single-handedly undressing the Toronto FC defense on like 3 consecutive plays, and those are the only chances that the Houston Dynamo got, and they scored on all 3 of those. So definitely put that one as far as being an outlier, whereas, you know, the rest of their form I think is more indicative of who this team is and where they've been struggling. But you know, to your point, Mark, I have no idea where the Houston Dynamo are going to be headspace wise. You know, they're now, they're 6 points out of the Western Conference playoffs right now. And that's with Portland Timbers just jumping them this past weekend. You got to think that Portland's going to make the playoffs and catch them with 2 games in hand. So, you know, you're looking at, you got to hope that RSL or FC Dallas crash out, or, you know, maybe the LA Galaxy completely implode, just, you know, with Zlatan and everything. But you got to right the ship and win a couple games, and you still got to hope that somebody else is going to fall down as well. So, I mean, I don't know where Houston's going to be from a headspace standpoint. Who knows what their game plan's going to be? It is Davey Arnault who's taken over as the interim head coach down in Houston. Does he completely have a different philosophy in the same way that we saw Connor Casey completely flip the script in terms of how the Rapids were playing and what they chose to prioritize? So, you know, maybe this one's just, you know, going to be a complete and total wild card, just because I have no idea how Houston's going to line up, because we don't have a lot of game film on what a Davey Arnault coached Houston Dynamo looks like vis-a-vis, you know, Wilmer Cabrera coach team. So we could see a team come out and have, you know, the exact same style of play and still struggle and lay an egg. They could change something completely that maybe was obvious to Arnault and the players in ways that Wilmer Cabrera was maybe being a little bit stubborn, and maybe it takes a little bit of time for them to figure it out, or maybe it clicks almost immediately. So I don't know what to make of the Houston Dynamo in that respect. But I think maybe if Connor Casey's really conscious about players getting minutes and everything such that it's not a team going in with three games in 8 days, you know, going into the Saturday. I think the Rapids will be rested enough to get a result against the Houston Dynamo. And with it being a 7 o'clock game here, Mark, that's an 8 o'clock game at Houston. So you've got the sun down for an extra hour. So maybe a little bit cooler. So maybe the humidity doesn't affect, the Rapids as much. So maybe that's one little area they can get something. But, you know, if we're doing predictions like you've shied away from in recent weeks, you know, I'd probably pick the Rapids to lose probably, you know, probably 3-1 on the Wednesday against Minnesota United. But then I could definitely see them going there and being defensive and easily getting a 1-1 draw against Houston. And particularly if, you know, Houston's the bad extreme that I've said is certainly possible for them, I could see Kai Kamara going there just completely dunking on this Dynamo defense. And, you know, maybe they're weak enough and maybe the Rapids are a little bit more self-aware such that Albert Elias doesn't do what he did to them, you know, back in, what was it, April or March, I think, you know, at DSG. Sam Vines has grown as an individual defender, and we've seen that wide player, whoever it is, you know, help out a little bit more defensively. If they just neutralize that connection and Lawless does his job against Mauro Minotas, you know, I'm not as fearful of the Houston Dynamo attack, given how they've been playing and what's happened to them this week, as I, you know, was, you know, 3-4 months ago, or even certainly, you know, in the beginning of June.
All right.
You don't want to give predictions at all, Mark?
Oh, predictions. I think Colorado loses 3-1 in Minnesota. I think Colorado gets a 2-2 draw in Houston.
All right, who scores the goals, Mark?
Oh, I don't do that. That's ridiculous. I mean, Kai, if you're going to ask me that, you know I'm going to say Kai Kamara because math says that's like the easiest thing to do. But why not? Let's just draw out a crazy one. Let's just, and if this is true, you should buy me a bottle of really good Colorado liquor when I'm out there in a couple weeks. But I'm going to throw out a crazy one. Kofi Opare scores a goal. Kofi Opare.
Okay, I'm gonna say that Kofi Opare does not play more than 60 minutes in this week at the absolute most. He did make the bench though, so maybe if there's a little bit of rotation, we'll have to see whether or not Tommy Smith is available. All right, Mark, let's get to our one Ask HTHL who we have this week. This one comes from Jody Robbins. Hello, Jody. Hashtag Ask HTHL. Why do you think Shin Yashiki is consistently starting over Lewis? Both have offensive skill, but I think Lewis is better and is clearly faster. Both are bad on defense. I guess Andre is better at holding up and combining while Lewis just goes. I guess just goes as in he just immediately chooses to go forward. I should say, Mark, I forgot to mention Jonathan Lewis for me had a stone cold penalty on Jerome Kasha in the second half against the San Jose Earthquakes. That was brought up on instant replay, and supposedly it got checked by VAR, and then ultimately, you know, was not a clear and obvious foul. But I agree with Jody's comments that the two players are very distinct and different, and Lewis might be a lot more direct, whereas Shin Yashiki's maybe still has brings some of his false 90 skills that he had with DU to a wide player role. Mark, your thoughts on these two players, the differences between them, and why we might be seeing a little bit more Andre than Jonah in our lives right now.
I don't really have a good answer to that. My sinking suspicion is it's a question of small sample size. That like, and it's not that small, but we haven't had Jonathan Lewis for that long on the club, to be honest. I mean, he's only been with the club since like mid-May, so it's a couple of weeks, honestly. It's like 8 weeks. So my suspicion is that at the end of the season, they will have had roughly equal amounts of time. My other sinking suspicion is that if you really do believe that Shin Yashiki is getting more starts and it's not going to even out at the end of the season, but that Connor Casey really is selecting him willfully, that it has to do with the fact that Lewis is excellent at just burning down that sideline and getting into the final third, but only in the corner, right? He's good at getting to the line. Shin Yashiki is going to cut in or cut outside or swing in across or play a short ball or play a combination or put it onto his left or make a spin move. Like, he's just capable of more, so that there's no doubt that I think Lewis is faster, but I think Shinyashiki gives you more options, that he can pull up short and take a shot or lay off the ball and make a break into the box while Kai Kamara is working towards the back post. Or he can, you know, go to the far line and then swing in across with his off foot. Like, he can do a lot of things. Whereas Lewis is, I wouldn't say one-dimensional, but maybe only a little bit two-dimensional. But I do think at the end of the season, you're going to wind up seeing that the two have roughly the same amount of minutes. You know, don't quote me on that, or maybe the whole point of being on a podcast is so that people can quote me on that. I don't know, man. Matt, what do you think? Is it, am I anywhere in the ballpark, or is there a different reason?
No, I think you're in the ballpark. You know, let's just look at some stats, Mark, and, you know, I will start, for the sake of this, Jody. I think it's, you know, a little unfair to compare the players under Anthony Hudson and then immediately after the, coaching switch. And then obviously you had Jonathan Lewis unavailable, you know, for almost, you know, a month and change due to the Gold Cup. So if we're going from the first game that Jonathan Lewis was back from international duty, that was the 2-2 draw, the chaotic one at Portland Timbers on July the 13th. The Rapids have played five games since then. In those five games, both of these players have participated in all five, so 10 caps between the two of them evenly. Jonathan Lewis has three starts and then has subbed on in the last two games, and then Jonathan Lewis has gone the full 90 minutes just once in those games. He went 87 minutes at Portland, to be fair, but then he played 18 minutes against Montreal and then 24 minutes against San Jose. Andre Shinyashiki, meanwhile, has made four starts in those times and then one substitute appearance. Jonathan Lewis did sub on for Shinyashiki. So that's the only game that Shinyashiki started and did not play the full 90 minutes. And then Shinyashiki subbed on for Kamara at halftime at San Jose and was more of a central player. So I think we're seeing Jonathan Lewis get less minutes than Shinyashiki. One, because Andre can play a couple of different roles. Clearly, Connor Casey was happy or content with Shinyashiki playing up top as the main striker. He can obviously be underneath in the Diego Rubio role, and we've seen Shinyashiki play on both wings. So he has played under Connor Casey anywhere in that front four between the underneath striker slash number 10, the pure number 9 that's mostly been Kai Kamara, and the two wing roles. Well, for the most part, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, we've only seen Jonathan Lewis mostly on the left sided, of the field.
Anywhere but the left.
Yes, so some of that might just be positional in that, you know, Shinyashiki can play a couple of different roles, and Lewis might be better as a left winger than Andre, but he can't play that role. He can't play any of the other three roles, certainly not better than Sam Nicholson, and I think it'd be fun to experiment on FIFA. I don't know that I would want to see Connor Casey replace Kai Kamara in a competitive game that means something with Jonathan Lewis up top. So I think that's one thing to certainly take into account. And to your point, Mark, about their skill sets being different, you know, Jonathan Lewis is just such a force when he gets the ball and gets his head up and has just a little bit of space in front of him, or even just one step on the opposing defender, regardless of who that is. And we've seen that, you know, where he's burned somebody at least once or twice in a game. And I want to say almost every single game that we've seen Lewis play in and then play more than 30 minutes, you know, at least coming off of the bench. But in that, Mark, I think that makes Lewis a very effective weapon as a super sub, especially in the last two games where you're playing Montreal and San Jose. Those opponents are going to come to DSG Park, try and get a result. They're going to try and possess the ball. And if you have other players tuckering them out so much, you've got a guy who's just played 70 minutes possessing the ball, doing a whole bunch of running on in a wide position. And now he's got to come up against a Jonathan Lewis who's conditioned to altitude and is completely fresh. And we saw Jonathan Lewis do that in the second half against San Jose and almost win a penalty. So in that, I think Shinyashiki might be a little bit more valuable to you in build-up play that, you know, would necessitate him starting and playing the full 90 minutes or having a couple of different roles. And Jonathan Lewis is just an absolutely effective super sub if you just want to go in there, say, you know, and say that, you know, Sam Vines and whoever else have just tuckered out the opposing right back. Just go out there and absolutely burn his ankles, Jonathan. And so I think he's capable of doing that. I like both of them and their different skill sets. Maybe the one thing that I will add, Mark, is that given how we saw how differently the Rapids approached the two games against San Jose recently, Sam Vines was getting overrun in that first half at Avaya Stadium a couple of weeks ago, and you saw us, particularly in the first half, Shinyashiki track back a lot more, and almost he, you know, I would say he was almost even, where there were times that Sam Vines went ahead of him, and Shinyashiki was almost the, you know, the starting left back at times. So I agree with Jody's comment that, you know, Lewis doesn't defend a whole lot. Andre, in being a little bit more dribbly and wanting to help in the build-up play, you know, probably, if I were to look at their FIFA skills, I would say that Lewis has a low defensive work rate. I would say that Shinyashiki has a medium defensive work rate and was clearly willing to exchange and help out Vines a little bit more. So some of that might just have been tactical with the opponent, and given how Vines got completely overrun on that first goal for San Jose, it might just be a small sample size. Maybe we'll see, you know, that change if Lewis's, you know, skill set is a little bit more value for 60 minutes or for the whole 90 minutes, or maybe we'll see Shinyashiki move into a different role. But it's definitely something to worth seeing. And I think, you know, as we've talked about with all four of these wide players, if we're including Rubio, who we've seen out wide at times also, Mark, that just all four of those players do something slightly different in each one of those roles. And I think that's better than having four wing players who all do exactly the same thing. And in that, you know, you can see that Connor Casey can mix and match with them and can make adjustments with those players, and then can also make personnel adjustments as well. So I would rather have four wide players who all do something slightly different and are all capable of doing it well. And Shinyashiki, I thought, had a really good game on Saturday, and I thought Jonathan Lewis had a really good game on Saturday as well. And so I'd rather have that than have four guys who are all doing the exact same thing. And in that, I think they both have a role to play at left winger, left midfielder, or elsewhere on the team. Anything else, Mark, or shall we get out of here?
You covered that really well, man.
Thank you.
Let's hope we can get some results this week. Not that, you know, everything is building towards, you know, next year, really, but it'd still be nice to get a couple more scalps down the road.
Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Mark, where can people find your stuff again?
I am at rabbimarkashergoodman.org. No, I'm .com. rabbimarkashergoodman.com/soccer_rabbi.
And then if you want to have my stuff, you know, go to Joe30330. Just kidding, folks. Lastwordonsoccer.com. Check us out on Twitter as the podcast, at Rapids96podcast. That's me 99% of the time. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL, as Jody did. If you want to get in more touch, aren't on Twitter, have something that takes longer than 280 characters, Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Subscribe, rate, and review. Share us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on pretty much every single podcatcher you could find. And then if you care, patreon.com/rapids96podcast. Listeners, we'll see you next week, where we're talking about the Rapids double game week, and then looking forward to the second leg of the 2019 Rocky Mountain Cup that will be Pecky-less. We'll see you then, folks.